discussion and briefing at times, but I do want to introduce myself. I'm Scott Wall, the Executive Vice Chancellor and Provost here at UCLA. And I want to welcome you to this wonderful celebration, and I want to thank the organizers for asking me to come. It's really an honor to be here and celebrate 70 years of research, study, and education in labor in California. And I was reflecting, coming over here, walking across the campus, which was built by labor, how essential labor has been to the construction, the well-being, and the welfare, and the economy of California as a whole. I mean, what better state could you imagine where 70 years has been devoted to the study of labor and its meaning in the context of our society and our economy? Originally, the Institute for Industrial Relations, and now the Institute for Research in Labor and Employment, which is too many letters, the IRLE, and thanks to Chris Tilley for that. But the IRLE is really essential, and its predecessor was essential to this kind of understanding. And what's also important, it's not just the focus on labor, but appropriate to California and appropriate to UCLA, is that the approach to labor has been through many different facets and many different disciplines, humanities, economics, business, you can name it, sociology, all the fields have been brought to bear on this most essential subject about the history and well-being of California, its past, its present, and its future. It's important to, I want to acknowledge, because I am an historian by trade, there is some history here in the room, aside from Chris Tilley. Archie Kleingartner is here, who is one of the people who have really made this center in its origin very, very important. So California, which is often the birthplace of advocacy and activism, is an important place to do this study, and the IRLE is the ideal location for that. Following in a long line of illustrious directors, it's really great now that Abel Valenzuela steps into that role and takes over the leadership of this vibrant and essential organization here at UCLA. And it's important that his family's here to celebrate that step forward. Tonight you're here about the Institute's advancements and the things that it plans to do under Abel's leadership. As a professor of Chicano Studies and Urban Planning, he's a renowned expert on labor and sociology, especially day labor, something which is crucial to the lives of many, many people in California. Bears very great importance on the contemporary immigration dispute that might be going on. You've heard about it. It's that kind of insight that we expect not only from the leader of the Institute, but the Institute itself. So he became the Institute's director. Abel became the Institute's director last fall. We're excited to see the new insights that the Institute will follow under his leadership. And he's an old friend and a great colleague, so I want to welcome Abel Valenzuela and turn the podium over to him. Abel.
Good evening, everybody, and welcome to our 70th anniversary celebration. We have lots to be proud of and to celebrate, but first I really need to give some thanks. First person that comes to mind is Brittany Lee. If it wasn't for all of her hard work, we would not be here and enjoying the music, the drinks, the food, and our companionship, everybody here. So thank you, Brittany, and of course, her research and her staff and the administration of the Institute for Research on Labor and Employment. I also wanted to thank Dean Laura Gomez, Division of the Social Sciences. My colleague, Provost and Executive Vice Chancellor Scott Y. I think he's already taken off. Former directors of the Institute for Research on Labor and Employment, many who are here in the room, tonight we had a nice pre-dinner celebration so that I wouldn't have to speak as much about each of them individually today. Thank you for being here. And I want to thank all of you for taking time out of your hectic schedule to come on this campus, on our campus, and celebrate and honor our Institute's 70th birthday. So, tonight, we're here to celebrate one of the oldest, and I would argue most productive, multidisciplinary organized research units in the University of California. That's seven decades of research, teaching, and service on behalf of working Californians. So just to put it in context, UCLA is 97 years of age, and so when we were created, UCLA was only 27. We've been around almost as long as UCLA. The Institute for Research on Labor and Employment has a storied and a very important role in the University of California, in Los Angeles, and its impact on California has never been more important. And so, as part of our celebration today, we ask the question, what is UCLA's role in workers' lives today? Each of our panels. After tonight, I'm pretty confident that you'll be impressed and pleased with the important role that UCLA and our institute plays. Quickly, for those of you who are good at this, hashtag IRALE70, and also join us on Instagram. So Twitter and Instagram, please do that. I've been told that it's very important for social media. So, hashtag IRALE70. I am often asked what we do at the Institute for Research on Labor and Employment. We do empirical, rigorous, and policy-driven research to make a difference in worker lives, to better understand our changing economy, and to engage with community stakeholders and change agents. The research that we undertake is also unique in that it draws from our labor studies program, our teaching program, and it incorporates undergraduate and graduate students in data collection, data analysis, and policy prescription. Our undergraduate classes are robust. They continue to grow, and student evaluations all point to our applied research applications, our service learning offerings, and various opportunities to work in real time in civil society. Every year, we place over 300 students in research, community-based, and civic organizations, including worker centers and unions. At the Institute, we host three other very important units that also contribute to research, teaching, and service. The UCLA Labor Center is world-renowned for connecting our students with the labor movement, for generating millions in research dollars to study pressing issues of wage theft, young workers, worker centers, immigrant work, the undocumented, and increasingly important, the fluid and evolving gig economy. We'll be launching a research project this summer on that subject. Our third unit, the Labor and Occupational Safety and Health Program, or LOSH, also generates millions in federal grants to undertake research on worker safety, training programs, and curricula that protects workers and guides management in safe and more productive work opportunities. Our fourth unit, HARP, the Human Resources Roundtable, connects the latest research on human resource strategies and best practices to executives and managers in the practice of increasing efficiencies, hiring strategies, and inclusive and diverse workforce strategies. There is just no doubt in my mind that the work that we do bridges UCLA to Los Angeles, to California, and beyond, keeping honest our mission as a great land-grant public institution. If you haven't already, please take some time to see the slideshow for an abbreviated and amazing history of our institute. The slideshow was running, but we decided not to run it while I speak. For example, you may not know that the institute was founded in 1946, what you do, because I mentioned it earlier, at a time when collective bargaining was on the rise and tensions between workers and management were at its peak. The 1940s was an interesting political period. We were actually founded under California Republican Governor Errol Warren, who later went on to become a Supreme Court Justice. And we were founded during the time of the Red Scare, or the anti-communist era. The Republican governor saw the founding of the Institute for Industrial Relations, that's the name that we were previously known as, Institute for Industrial Relations, as a critical and a matter of public importance. The university, then as now, was seen as a neutral arbiter that could stay above the fray of these conflicts and provide critical research, assistance, training, and empirics to improve worker lives. They were also about improving management and worker relationships and to undertake key research. You may also not know that the Institute for Industrial Relations was first proposed by UCLA economics professor Paul Dodd, who was then the West Coast labor mediator for the War Labor Board and an expert on health insurance. He proposed to UC President Sproul and Governor Warren an institute, quote-unquote, that would explore a deeper engagement with labor and the world of work. If you look at the black and white photo behind me, it shows a group of trade unionists on campus. It marked a break with the long-standing discomfort, the squeamishness of the UCLA campus toward worker programs. Paul Dodd suggested a summer residential labor institute on campus. However, this time it would be, quote-unquote, under the guidance of the university. They weren't quite comfortable with this connection. Also peculiar to our institute is our research on work and race, which also has a long and storied tradition. Paul Bullock, a researcher at the institute, undertook a study on Watts in the aftermath of the Los Angeles riots of 1964. He studied job segregation and unemployment. His work gained national attention in the wake of the civil unrest and was credited as one of the first studies to show that racial discrimination on the job existed. The New York Times commented that it was, quote unquote, one of the fairest and most incisive reports on work and race. From then on, the Institute on Industrial Relations went on to found many of the units that many of you are familiar with and that I've already mentioned. Over its history, the Institute for Research on Labor and Employment has taken on major research projects through the three different units. Most recently on day labor, on minimum wage, wage theft, on immigration, on black worker issues, and as I mentioned already, this upcoming summer, we're going to be exploring the gig economy, a project that also has origins at the Institute with some earlier professor, Gary Blasey, for example, with the taxi industry and how that's been in part decimated by the gig economy. I would be remiss if I didn't comment on our current political climate and polarized era and why our research, teaching, and service is now more important than ever. In the same spirit and purpose of an earlier era, the Enlightenment drew on empiricism, on facts and data that were collected and analyzed through a scientific lens to move us forward with discoveries, with theories, and with frames that would benefit all of us. When I'm asked, what am I doing to make a difference in the current period? I speak about the work that we are doing here at UCLA and the Institute. And I always draw back to our teaching program where we really are training the next generation of thought and change agents, entrepreneurs and organizers, writers, researchers and teachers, all who I am certain will make a difference and move our country beyond our current divisions. At least that's my hope. Our future depends on it, and it has never mattered as much. Thanks to our research and work, this is exactly what UCLA should be doing and is doing here in Los Angeles and California. So at this point in my short comments, I'd like to ask all of you to get involved, and trust me, and indulge me, this is going to be really interesting. I'd like to have you take out your cell phones. I imagine some of you have already done that. But please do that. Go to Menti, that's M-E-N-T-I.com, and enter this code, 97726. As people are answering this short survey, you'll see this word cloud populating behind me based on your answers. This is a nice teaching tool and provides real-time summary responses of your answers. So let's take a quick minute to do this, and then I'll finish with my last comment, which is actually more of a pitch. So I'll come back in about 30 seconds. I think we're working on the technology.
Preventing the 12 deaths in this country every day from work injuries. And 50,000 work-related deaths each year from debilitating illnesses.
HART is a human resources roundtable. We have impacted the human resources community by giving them the skills, the tools, and the knowledge that they need to in turn impact their organizations by designing employee strategies and programs that will help their organizations compete in the future.
The UCLA Labor Center has served as a bridge between the campus and unions and workers of Los Angeles. And we view this partnership as a way of both strengthening the university learning environment to promote research, but also to be engaged in direct service activities that improve the lives of working people.
I feel as though I've been blessed with a very unique opportunity to connect my work as a student activist to work that is both academically and institutionally supportive to communities at large.
Every year in the Labor Studies program, we place over 300 students in community-based organizations as well as social change organizations who are making important impacts on workers' lives, and many go on to dedicate their lives to public service.
So one of the things that has impacted me significantly has been doing my undergraduate research, taking surveys, doing interviews, but also being in a position where I can take them on the streets.
In this divided political era, the role of the university is now more important than ever. We must continue focusing our research and our empirical effort, not only in Los Angeles, but across the country. UCLA should be a leader.
The practice of human resources, it's really a very exciting time because of all of the changes that are occurring in the workplace. Due to globalization, technology, changing workforce demographics.
Those programs have impacted the community in several ways. A huge outreach and education campaign in Southern California has helped to prevent heat illness deaths among workers in the fields, in construction, in car wash industries.
My most treasured memory, I have many, but my most recent memory would be a case competition that we partnered with T-Mobile, and we had 60 students who solved a problem and brought some very creative and innovative ideas to T-Mobile on how they can better hire millennials.
Working here has been an incredible privilege, and I'm able to work with some of the most impactful labor and community organizations who are working together to make Los Angeles a better city for us all.
So when I hear our work being discussed by legislators, by policy wants, by program administrators, by local elected officials, I feel really good because the work is making an impact, and our work will continue in this forward direction. Impact policy to impact and improve the lives of California's workers and by extension the rest of the United States. That was a lot of fun doing. First time, thank you. We have a couple of proclamations. And it's news to me because it wasn't even a part of the program. But we want to give a couple of minutes to do two proclamations, one from the Assembly and another one from the County Board of Supervisors. So maybe we do the Assembly first.
Sure.
My name is Timothy Pershing. I'm a senior field representative for Assemblymember Richard Bloom, who's a UCLA alum. And he is out of town and would have been here tonight, and I can assure you he would want to say a couple key things. One is, and this is for the students involved here, and very much for the professors who are here currently doing work in the labor-related field, which is extremely broad. We don't do any policy without the data and research behind it in our office. And you can talk to Dana Cuff over at City Lab to find out what we've done in housing and how they have worked with us on that front. When you have these kind of issues that you've research and you want them brought forward on the policy front, reach out to us. We're right down there in Santa Monica. And a lot of work can be done this way, because when we have the grounds, the data, the research to do it, we can move on things. And if it's UCLA work, and this is for the students, especially the professors know this, it's taken seriously, guaranteed. It's not second-guessed. It's coming out of UCLA, it's going to be good. So you're going to take that with you for the rest of your life, too. When you say you were trained at UCLA, it really means something. It means something in the political sphere, especially in California. So on behalf of the Assembly, and on behalf of myself, as I am a local 80 member with the IA, as well as a social scientist, I would like to present this resolution to the Institute itself for its 70 years of incredibly hard work and sometimes, shall we say, not so well appreciated work. Keep fighting.
My name is Russell Horning. I'm the Economic Development Deputy for Supervisor Hilda Solis. But tonight, I'm honored to bring to all of you and to the Institute this proclamation on behalf of all the members of the Board of Supervisors, wishing you sincere congratulations on the 70th year. I'd like to just echo some of the comments that were just made a second ago by our colleagues from the Assembly. We are very excited at the board to be able to work with the Labor Center, with the Institute for Research in Labor and Employment, with LOSH, with all the different components. This past year we were able to pass a minimum wage increase and create a new dedicated to fighting wage theft in a county as big as ours, with a problem as big as ours. And that was possible because we had that research to really help us see the way. And I think the county is at a particularly special moment now, with a lot of folks on the board who come from organized labor, who come from a background, really with all those relationships with many of you in the room. And we're really looking forward to other research that comes and that helps us think about the direction we would like to take in terms of what's going to be really in the best interest of working families throughout LA County. I think just lastly, I just want to take a little moment of personal privilege. I myself was a fellow at the UCLA Labor Center. I came to Los Angeles 20 years ago. I was working for an immigrant rights attorney, a friend of Raul and mine, and wanted to sort of do something bigger and something different. I had the opportunity to come to the Luskin School to get a master's in urban planning, but you know, it's one thing to have the intelligence, it's one thing to have the skills, it's another to have your values, but to be able to bring all those things together and to be able to kind of hit the ground running in a community and in a neighborhood and in a region as dynamic as Los Angeles, and the Labor Center was what enabled me to do that. And I was able to spend some great years of my life working at the LA County Federation of Labor on some of the most exciting the region is today, and now to be able to have that continued honor to be able to continue working on behalf of labor and also celebrating the potential that a partnership with universities can have at the level of the Board of Supervisors is just amazing to me. So again, I just want to invite all of you to feel free and please come reach out to us. We need all of your help. There's so much work to be done, and we're so excited to be partnering with you today. Thanks.
Seeing their success and their impact and how they're pushing policy and driving legislation to impact workers' lives. And a lot of it, most of it, is driven by research, empirical research, a lot of it coming out of UCLA. Just one example this morning, or this afternoon. Moving on to our program, I want to introduce one of our speakers, Professor Dr. Robin D.G. Kelly. Professor Kelly is the Gary B. Nash Professor of American History at UCLA. He also earned his PhD here at UCLA. His research explores the history of social movements in the United States, the African diaspora, and Africa, black intellectuals, music, visual culture, contemporary urban studies, historiography and historical theory, poverty studies, and ethnography, colonialism and imperialism, organized labor, and constructions of race and surrealism. Surrealism, Marxism, and nationalism. He does a lot.
Yeah.
He's brilliant. He's my friend, and he's my colleague here at UCLA, and I'm so pleased that he'll be speaking before us tonight. Rob.
Such an honor to be here for lots of reasons. You know, one, it's the 70th anniversary of IRLE. One, two, because Abel is this brilliant friend and scholar who has taught me so much and has taken up the leadership of this amazing organization. And also, because I'm also a member of the Faculty Advisory Committee, which is one of the great things that I'm able to do here. And it's also amazing that you're still here. And this is the theme of my talk tonight, that there is a labor center, that you're still here. And under the incredible leadership of Abel, and before that, Chris Tilley, and then you think about all the amazing people, I'm not going to name them all, but I think about, you know, my friend Kent Wong, head of the labor center, Lisa Delpo-Loach, and Lois Smallwood-Cuevas, who's back there, who, you know, even though the Black Worker Center is independent, has been a real pillar for the work that IRLE does. And of course, I can name everyone, but you know, as you know from the history that Abel shared with you, it goes back to 1946. But I want to emphasize that history has not been a cakewalk. You know, it's actually been seven decades of struggle, which mirrored the labor movement itself. You know, after 25 years of effect. Of sort of promoting effective forms of management, cooperation with organized labor, in this, as Abel mentioned, this kind of expansionary period, despite Taft-Hartley, despite some of the oppositions in the Cold War, this was a post-war boom. By the 1970s, things begin to change. You have the global slump, economic crisis, accompanied by a war on labor. The 70s had more strikes by labor than any other decade since the late 40s, and a lot of those strikes were lost. This was a war on labor on a global scale. And despite that, you know, the Institute endured all these massive cuts, was barely on life support as we moved into the 70s and 80s, and given a boost in the 1990s with the resurgence of the AFL-CIO, with the victory of John Sweeney and Richard Trumka and Linda Chavez Thompson. And some of you remember that time. It was a very exciting time. We thought labor was going to win. Well, they were still fighting. And then, as a result of that, though, in 2000, the state legislature established the UC Institute for Labor and Employment, ILE. And then, of course, December 2003, Governor Arnold Schwarzenegger declared a fiscal state of emergency, and what did he cut? The ILE's budget. Eliminated it. And it was only restored after a long struggle on the part of community people and faculty and students in that year, 2004. And then, eventually, it becomes the Institute for Research on Labor and Employment in 2007. So there continue to be struggles after that, but you're still here. You're still here. But now let's not kid ourselves. And here's where I'll probably never be invited back, but it's okay. And that is that we have to be clear there's a role for ILE in defense of labor, but universities have not always been our friends. And that's the truth. And part of that role is to struggle with the university to make sure that workers' rights are defended and protected, even at this university, at every university.
Yeah.
Universities look like now. This is an era where you have casualization of labor, teaching staff, as well as the outsourcing of non-union labor in the realms of maintenance, food services, and security. We've seen that over the last 30 years. Rapidly increasing tuitions, severe budget cuts in the intellectual arenas considered unprofitable, areas in social sciences, in humanities, non-STEM related fields. The creeping privatization of public universities is corporate donors and higher tuitions and investments in prisons and fossil fuel industries and corporations whose business dealings buttress human rights violations and replace, you know, shrinking state funding. This is what the university looks like. And even our funding streams are anti-labor oftentimes. We have to really think about what that means. That's why students are at the forefront always saying, you know, we're not going to invest in fossil fuels because we know the impact it has, not just on the environment but on workers. The financialization of higher education generates what? Massive student debt. This is something we have to fight against. And as we know, the history of universities and its own labor force has been a kind of a mixed bag. And I'm very fortunate tonight to share the podium with Maria Elena Durazo, who's one of my all-time heroes. Yeah. We're also celebrating the 20th anniversary, roughly, of the struggle at USC, Crosstown, where I used to teach, 20 years ago, where SEIU and Local 399 and the hotel employees and restaurant employees, Local 11, you know, were fighting for a contract, and she played the key role in that struggle. And crucial in that struggle was her 11-day hunger strike in 1998 to demand that workers who had were fired for participating in an action with students be reinstated. Don't forget that, and I'm hoping she'll talk about it, but she really knows the struggle, what it means to defend workers' rights at universities. Now, given where we are now, and given the hostility to labor around the world, and the potential for labor to build power, because we actually, this is, crisis is an opportunity as well, we need IRLE more than ever. And I say this with all sincerity, because just as you've been dodging bullets for the last 30 years, you know, you never stood still. And this is also important. You went from doing that traditional, very, very important industrial relations scholarship, you know, to areas of teaching and community engagement that really are about empowering workers, especially in shifting global technology-driven, increasingly precarious labor market. So it's hard to imagine worker organization, like immigrant workers, black workers, day laborers, women, LGBTQ workers, or even the question of worker solidarity in LA without IRL. So this was very clear to me when I decided in preparation for my talk to listen to some of the recordings from the 40th anniversary of the Institute in October 1986. If you go on the website, you can actually hear some of these from that celebration. And you hear these talks by people like Daniel J.B. Mitchell, Benjamin Aaron, others. And they talked about the principles of justice and equity. They talked about full employment, which, remember full employment? If you don't, we need to think about that again. They talked about the changing role of collective bargaining, and this was in 1986, during the period of retrenchment, during the period of Reagan. And when I was a grad student, 1 year away from my dissertation, I'm walking around, what's weird about it, I'm walking around in October 1986, you know, writing my dissertation, doing labor history, and I'm completely oblivious to the Institute. I didn't know it existed. So true, some of these principles still stand, but what you've been able to do is shift the attention from the big industrial unions to low-wage, marginalized workers and day labor, fast food, retail, home care, domestic work, the ones, the powerful engines of racial and gender exclusion, often working with capital to impose glass ceilings and racially segmented wages. The 21st century labor movement, which you reflect, has largely embraced principles of social justice, anti-racism, immigrant rights, and cross-border strategies. We've done such important work to advance the cause of working people as opposed to labor bureaucracies. Looking at ways to strengthen California Domestic Worker Bill of Rights, figuring out ways to reduce barriers to nurse-physician collaboration, exposing and fighting wage theft, defending workplace rights, fighting the criminalization of the unemployed, the rise of a debtor-prison system, and on and on. And also with the important work with Reverend James Lawson, you know, you really infuse kind of working class movements with the philosophy and practice of nonviolence. And I, you know, again, thank a lot of the folks here, people like Kent, Lana Luz Gonzalez, and of course, Reverend James Lawson, for this book that's out right now. I had other things, but I got 1 minute. Your work really reflects the new strategies for working people. From passing minimum wage laws at the municipal and state levels, to community benefits agreements, to secure living wage jobs, equitable working conditions, green building practices, affordable housing, as well as child care provisions. In other words, it's a vision not just of protecting and defending labor, but of transforming our society. See, that's what we should be in the business of doing, and that's what you're doing. And in alliance with movements such as the Movement for Black Lives, immigrant rights activists, campaigns such as Our Walmart and the Fast Food Workers Fight for 15, you're leading the way, building the most dynamic labor struggle we've seen in generations. So for me, these are not dark times, these are bright times, and you're shining light. Thank you. Woo.
Student speakers, and it's a big honor for me to introduce them to you. The first is Dr. Ana Luz Gonzalez, who also earned her PhD here at UCLA in urban planning. Her research focuses on low-wage work, poverty, and the role of community-based organizations in community development. Her dissertation examined the impact of day labor hiring sites on their labor market outcomes and civic engagement. She's currently a lecturer at UC Irvine. I'm very, very proud and pleased that we had a lot of opportunities to work together for many years. Dr. Gonzalez.
Thank you so much for inviting me to speak at such a wonderful celebration. Many years ago, I came to UCLA as a graduate student with the hope of wanting to change the world. I was eager to find ways to empower my community and to help workers like my mother and father fight for better wages and working conditions. As a master's student in urban planning, I quickly gravitated towards research projects that focused on workers in the low-wage industry. So naturally, RLA became my introduction into the world of labor, but it also quickly became my second home. As a first-year graduate student, I worked with RLA's current director, Abel Valenzuela, on a national study on day laborers. We traveled to over 20 states throughout the country and conducted the first ever census of day laborers. As part of the research team, I utilized my math background to collect and analyze data on day laborers, and I had the opportunity to meet workers and discuss face-to-face the journey to the U.S. and their experience working as day laborers here. In San Francisco, I met a worker who told me that he was homeless. And when I asked him why, it turned out that he was sending all his money home to his daughter so that she could go to school and become a doctor. I'll never forget the joy in his face when he spoke about his daughter. He was so proud. He looked at me and said, "You remind me of my daughter. I sleep on the streets because I want my daughter to be someone in this world. She's going to be the first in our family to be a doctor. She's going to help people just like you." In this study, we found that 50% of workers had experienced at least one instance of wage theft in the last 2 months of working as a day laborer. This means that one out of two workers were not getting paid for the work that they performed. It was experiences such as those that made me want to continue working to protect workers from abuse and exploitation. Several years later, I was fortunate to work with former IRLA director Ruth Milkman on a landmark study on the prevalence of wage theft and workplace violations. As part of the research team, Ruth and I conducted a focus group with garment workers at the Garment Worker Center. One of the questions we asked the workers was, "If you could have any job, what job would you choose?" And I was honestly quite shocked at the response. I assumed that most workers hated their job and wanted to be business owners or teachers, nurses, that they would pick a job that would be completely different than what they were doing now. And to my surprise, the majority of workers said that they would continue to work in the garment industry. One of the workers said to me, "I'm proud that I stitched that collar on your shirt. I'm proud that I make these garments that you wear. All I want is to be treated with dignity and respect." That phrase has remained with me and continues to guide the work that I do today. The research projects I've been involved in Ireland have afforded me opportunities that are not found at many universities. These projects have been pivotal in advancing policy and educational programs aimed at ending wage theft and making sure that workers are treated with dignity and respect. It is because of IRLE that I've learned how powerful research can be and how it could be a tool to transform workers' lives and lift the voices and stories of those who are so often ignored. Thank you very much.
Is a third-year transfer student from Santa Ana College. Also where Ana Luz is from, at least Santa Ana, not from the college part. He's a product of immigrant parents. He's one of our great students. He will be graduating with his Bachelor's of Arts in Political Science this June, and also with a minor in Labor Studies and Urban Planning. Fernando.
So good evening, everybody. Oh, didn't expect that to be so loud. I've been offered the opportunity to share with you 5 minutes of my side of things. As Director Valenzuela mentioned, my name is Fernando Antunes. I want to talk a little bit about my family. By the way, thank you, Ana Luz. That was such a seamless transition. I thought I was going to get a little too personal, but now I feel more comfortable. You know, living in a family of six, all crammed into one little room, you would expect the chief majority of my childhood to be filled with noise, with yelling, or plates crashing, whatever that cliche is. But to be honest, the vast majority of my childhood, I think back and I realize a lot of it was filled with silence. Let me explain. My father, his name is Santiago Antunes. He's a great guy, but he's a man of few words. He's worked in the same factory for 25, 26 years, making the same airplane nuts and bolts for the same airplane parts, clocking in at 5 a.m., and clocking out at 5 p.m. 25 years, that's longer than I've been alive. But that, above all else, showed me and my siblings the value of a hard work ethic, you know, despite your lack of social graces. My mom, Margarita Hernandez, standing at 5'3", was the absolute antithesis of him. She had the magic in her to turn hours into seconds the moment that she opened her mouth. A proud Guerrerenza, a proud product of Guerrero, Mexico. She stands at 5'3", and is 90% of my heart. She somehow, with the second grade equivalency with an education of a second grade equivalency, managed to be the CFO of our household. She managed to juggle her full time job at Northgate as one of their cooks. Still have her side hustle of selling tamales to probably half of Orange County, and still somehow carve out time to brainstorm about the restaurant that she would one day own. They're amazing people. And it's at this point in the speech that I'd like to take a few seconds out to applaud them. They're not here with us, but if I could ask you to... They're my role models. But I don't wish their lives on anybody that I know. I mean, I love them with all my heart, and I hold them so close to my heart, but I instead want to focus on the other side of that glorified labor. I want to focus on the self-medication, the self-neglect, the mentality of hoy por ti, mañana por mí, today for you, tomorrow for me. See, in 2014, my mom started acting a little bit different. She started calling people by different names. She started, forgetting the keys, the typical signs, right? But she actually started developing what we would later find out to be frontotemporal dementia. And because of the ambivalent clinics, because we pursued the most accessible means of healthcare, holistic care, right? Self-medication, people in the neighborhood. We didn't find out until 2 years later that she actually had frontal temporal dementia. And it wasn't until April 10th, 2016 that my mom passed away due to complications from it. It's been a year and a day. And I don't think many people in my family still can fully grasp the implications of it. But the bright side here, I don't want to be negative, is if you're lucky like me and you've had the opportunity to experience the labor studies minor, if you've had a chance to experience organizations like the Labor Center and their work with mental health, organizations like I participated in, with like the ISAT of LA Coalition and my home away from home ideas at UCLA, the Undocumented Student Advocacy Org here at UCLA, you start to understand the linkage between labor and mental health. And that's something that I really want everyone to understand. It doesn't take mental illness, quote-unquote, to see that connection. It's my dad who has the energy to work his 12 hours, as always, but when he gets home, just wants to lay in bed all day. But the bright side is those organizations. No, and I mean that 100%. It's because of these organizations that I mentioned, the Downtown Labor Center, the classes, and the labor minor, that I see the work that needs to be done and is being done to this day. And so I want to leave on that note. We need to keep pushing back against that silence in mental health, the silence that permeated all throughout my household and still does. We need to push for better because we deserve better. Thank you all so much.
Celebration tonight, and it is truly my honor and privilege to introduce my friend and sister, Maria Elena Durazo. I first met Maria Elena when we were classmates in law school. She has served on as the head of the advisory committee of the UCLA Labor Center and helped to lead the fight against Arnold Schwarzenegger and those who tried to eliminate funding for the UC Labor Centers and the UC Institute for Research on Labor and Employment. We have worked together on the founding board of the LA Alliance for New Economy. We have worked together on the founding board of the Miguel Contreras Foundation. Maria Elena inspires me every day. She is one of the finest labor leaders in the country. And she is transform the Los Angeles labor movement. Yes. she unseated a racist incumbent in the Hotel Workers Union and emerged as the first Latina president of Unite Here Local 11. She courageously built a team of hotel worker leaders who took on some of the most powerful corporate interests in the city of Los Angeles and won. She went on to become the leader of the Los Angeles County Federation of Labor, merging the immigrant rights movement, the movement of workers of color, the movements of working people with the labor movement, and saw a broader vision of what the labor movement could and must be. And Maria Elena has now gone on to be nominated and elected as vice chair of the Democratic National Committee. Has declared her candidacy for the State Senate of California. Maria Elena represents the finest qualities of labor leaders in the country today, and it is my great honor to call her my friend and my sister. Please welcome Maria Elena.
Mention the number of years that all that has spent, because we have been in this movement together for many, many years. Like you said, People's College of Law, and the grand opening of the Labor Center downtown by MacArthur Park. So all these are just examples, I think, of what we've done. So I first want to congratulate Avin. For taking on this new leadership role. Thank you very much. You have a background that it takes to be able to do this. And I saw a pretty cool picture of you on a bus. That is really awesome. Wow. Can you imagine having your picture on billboards and on buses all over Los Angeles? So we're really proud of you. Really, really proud of you. So I too looked into a little bit, not as much, into the history of the Institute, and saw that it was Governor Earl Warren. But what was mentioned in this history was that it was his way of saying that the unions should be recognized as an important part of California society. That was the point. To recognize unions, the labor movement, as an important part of California society. So I think the leaders of the Institute have understood that it is their role and duty to integrate the needs, the aspirations of working class families into our most prized public universities, that those two have got to come together, and there's no reason that they should be considered separate. Higher public education should recognize how the collective voice of workers first pays for the system. Yeah. It is working families that pay for public higher education. I get that there are wealthy donors who also give to our universities, and that's great. But to sustain it year after year, decade after decade, it is working class families that do that. Yeah, right. It is a working class family. So if for nothing else, they are the permanent donors. They are the permanent donors of the universities. Second, they're the backbone of the economy, of economic artists in this nation. They're the backbone. Every industrial phase, and I'm not a historian, but from what I understand, every industrial phase has moved forward. Yes, research and development. That's a big part of that. But we have to recognize the men and women who did the work of those products, whether it was automobiles or steel or rubber or today the high-tech industry. Whatever it was men and women who worked really hard who moved us forward in economic phase after one after another. Workers have had to endure life and death abuses in enterprise. Now, a history that makes many uncomfortable. I don't want to hear that part of history. But how men and women have actually died on the job to do their jobs for the rest of society? I mean, to hear the latest statistic about 50,000 a year? I mean, what day and age is this when men and women who just want to work and survive and raise their families and live in a good neighborhood actually die on the job? That's a pretty outrageous, and it should make us uncomfortable. You know, whether it was in our economies, whether it was slavery, that was an economic system, slavery, or children working in factories, that was the economic system, or the Bracero program, or bringing over workers who were indentured servants, or even today's modern way of exploiting workers at independent contractor status. You know, the names change, the forms change, but the bottom line is that the system still relies on exploiting workers way beyond, and as Reverend Lawson refers to, is plantation capitalism. Plantation capitalism. So the Institute, the labor centers, the labor studies, the round table, and the labor occupational safety and health all together really should have whatever resources they need to provide the research, the support for working women, men and women, and our entire communities that have been left behind.
Yeah.
They should have whatever they need. And frankly, it is shameful that dollars are always available for business research and development, for trends that help businesses become more profitable, yet we have to fight for every single penny to sustain workers' research and development, working class research and development. That should not be the case. When are we going to make the right priorities as far as our dollars, our public dollars, how they are spent? You know, I lived through the most recent phases of that as Kent and others have been referred to. You know, a strong, vibrant labor movement created the Institute in the first place. A strong and revitalized labor movement was in place when somebody tried to destroy the Labor Institute and its programs. I remember quite well the day that the Labor Center was inaugurated. It marked a new era in Los Angeles. It was my late husband Miguel's pride and joy. We had an incredible, wonderful celebration right there in MacArthur Park, a poor and working class neighborhood. But you all have created the space for new ideas. You plant the seeds for new organizing, like the car wash campaign that was born in Los Angeles. You helped me break through in our national labor movement in creating a relationship with Chinese trade unionists. LA was the first labor council in the country to establish a sister city relationship with the Shanghai Labor Federation. That happened in LA as a result of the work of the Institute. You revitalized the power of nonviolent civil direct action strategy. strategy by reconnecting us with the extraordinary Reverend James Lawson. That they are classes after classes, groups of people who are being taught today by Reverend James Lawson. You teach the next generation of leaders with their powerful dreamer movement. You give space for you to learn to strategize and connect with working men and women like their parents, like the stories that were told a little while ago. You help to engage students at the Miguel Contreras High School, and you help us recruit the youth that then are teaching those high school students and teaching workplace rights workshops for their parents. You help immigrants and workers fight back against a racist, exclusive corporate agenda. You help black workers demand the same opportunities as everyone else to a good job. You help API brothers and sisters tell the truth about the poverty in their communities. You understand and uphold the law of the land. Sisters and brothers, the law of the land is collective bargaining. Yes. No one should be apologetic. Into office, he will not destroy the law of this land.
Yeah.
So, why is it the law of the land? Because it is the only way that workers' rights will be respected. Too many things we fight for and win become nothing more than pieces of paper. Laws that are not enforced at all. Tens of thousands of workers are denied timely medical treatment, even though the law says that they should get it within 30 days, and a fine of $500 for each day that they don't. But in fact, how many times are those fines actually assessed or collected? Farm workers won the right to cool drinking water and shade after 26 had died from the heat. 26 farm workers died from the heat, and then a law was passed. But people pay a bigger fine for riding in the HOV lane than farmers pay for denying farm workers water. Wage theft is still prevalent. Millions and millions of dollars a week just in LA. So your research exposes these abuses. But more importantly, you provide the opportunity for workers themselves to take collective action and enforce their rights. You help them know their worth. You help them learn to stand up for themselves. So it's no wonder when that California governor tried to shut you down, labor stepped up. Now he's gone and you're still here.
Yeah.
So let me just end by saying, I feel that I have a privileged life. And the reason is because every day I get to work with remarkable people. Their jobs, cooking, cleaning, washing dishes, may seem quite ordinary, but their stories, their dreams, their willpower are absolutely extraordinary. There are few experiences more powerful than watching an immigrant who walked across the desert to get here, walk door to door in a political campaign here, and then walk into her polling place to vote here. They are some of the bravest people in this country and in the world. I say thank you to the Institute and your labor work. Thank you to UCLA and the other UC campuses that will have a labor center.
Yes.
And remember, sisters and brothers, that what you do should be in the spirit of Dr. King and Cesar Chavez. It should be in the tradition of Lucy Parsons, who led the demand for the 8-hour day and established the world's first International Workers' Day. We will defend Muslims and lesbians. We will defend Mexicans and queers, white America and black America, women and men. You are part of awakening America's better soul. And just remember, as we resist Trump, we show our love for America. Si se puede.
Yeah. lot.
I briefly and quickly acknowledge and thank my family who's here. My father, Abed Sr. My sisters, Cindy and Gracie. My sister and brother-in-law, Monica and Jose Luis. My lovely and beautiful wife, Sophia, and my firstborn, Milan. There's also a lot of friends around the table, a lot of colleagues, a lot of supporters. I also want to thank you from the bottom of my heart for coming tonight. Please stick around, mingle, pick up a donor card, take pictures, tweet, remember it's hashtag IRLE70. But more than anything, leave feeling good about what we are doing here at UCLA, about what the Institute for Research on Labor and Employment is doing, and the positive impact that it's making on the lives of many, many workers, not only here in Los Angeles, but in California. Thanks to this collective effort, we're moving forward in a very difficult era, but really, this is about a positive message and about what we're going to do to make this effective change. Thank you so very much for coming.